seated.
The court is ready to hear argument in 040432, Moki Mac River Expedition versus Drug.
May it please the court, Mr. D. Thomas Bishop, here to present argument for petitioner. Petitioner reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
When Al Quist and the man that subsequently became known as Moki Mac Ellingston began leading Boy Scout troops on treks through the Grand Canyon 50 years ago, they probably anticipated desert days, cold nights, and perhaps even an occasional rattlesnake. But members of the court, I submit to you, they never anticipated, nor were they constitutionally required to anticipate, being hauled into a Dallas County prison years later.
I presume they didn't have the internet then.
They did not. I'll comment on the internet directly.
And markets have changed since then, obviously. But how is this different, or is it different, from the Michiana case that the court decided not too long ago?
Respectfully, Justice Benito, I think it is a stronger case for the absence of personal jurisdiction, which is what we're talking about, for two reasons. And Michiana, there's no question about the fact that there was delivery of a product in the state of Texas. Moki Mac had never delivered a product in the state of Texas. It's never led a rafting trip. It's never led a hiking trip in the state of Texas. And the second thing that you have in the Michiana case, Your Honor, is a misrepresentation, or at least the allegation of a misrepresentation, that truly does form the core of the case. I ask you to examine, I ask all the members of the court to examine, what's this case really about? Is this about a brochure? Is this about a visitor's acknowledgement of risk? Or, members of the court, is it about a slip and fall on a hiking trail in the Grand Canyon? And what I submit to the court, respectfully, is that it really is different. A business injury in Texas is not the equivalent of a bodily injury outside of Texas. And I think from the handout that we have before you and from all the briefing that we have supplied, you can see that in the analyses of the cases.
Well, it strikes me that a significant piece of Michiana was the factory outlets. Michiana did not advertise at all, did not try to sell to Texans, responded to an isolated phone call initiated by a Texan. It appears from the record here that it's arguable what piece, but a significant piece of Moki Mac's business comes from Texas, and they want that. They solicit that. They, if someone makes an inquiry or hits their website, they go on a distribution list. And
what's the difference there? Fair question. Let me see if I can give it a fair answer. First of all, let me back up and again state to you, I want to emphasize this. This is not a business injury case. This is a bodily injury case. And I submit to you, Justice O'Neill, that makes all the difference. Because but for our bodily injury, but for whatever negligence that may have occurred on that hiking trail in the state of Arizona, none of us would be here. And what I suggest to you that Michiana holds when it talks about attenuated contacts, or when it talks about fortuitous contacts or random contacts, and more importantly, what I suggest to you, the cases out of the Michigan Supreme Court, like the Buffalo Bill Cody's Lodge case, where somebody fell off a horse in Wyoming, or a ski resort in Canada, or even a Holiday Inn in the case of Wims versus Beach Terrace. What those courts say to us is this. The complaint in this action involves a personal injury that occurred in New Jersey and that allegedly resulting from defendant's negligent conduct in maintaining its motor inn. While it is true that the plaintiffs might not have visited the motor inn if plaintiff had not seen the defendant's brochure, the causal link between the brochures and the injury is simply too attenuated to say that the injury arose from defendant's activities.
I want to book a cruise, and I go to a website, and I find a cruise line, and it says safety equipment will be provided.
Right.
We enter into a contract. I'm going to pay you X amount, and here's what you're going to provide. And I go on the cruise, the boat sinks, and there are no life preservers.
Right. You probably have a valid claim against where the cruise line resides. I don't know what country you're in or what ocean waters you're in. You may have a valid claim against them there. But the mere fact that you got a brochure from them.
No, it's a contract. I
mean, it is a contract, but what is.
So if this were a breach of contract claim, do you think there'd be specific jurisdiction here?
I do not. And I'm, again, focusing loudly and proudly. I'm saying it without reservation. Bodily injury, personal injury claims are different. And when you examine the case law, courts throughout the nation that have faced Justice O'Neill, Disney World, Holiday Inn, Beach Terrace, Hyatt Corporation, or Buffalo Bill Cody's Resort in Wyoming, they've said, you know what, it's just too attenuated to say, gosh, I read that brochure, they kind of lured me into it. And the reason they say that is because without the causal conduct where the injury and the accident occurred, in this case, undisputedly, in Arizona, there is no suit.
So if the plaintiff in Michiana would have received his SUV and it had some defect on it, the next morning he drives and he's injured, are you saying that would have changed the outcome in Michiana?
Well, my sense in Michiana is that the court said, and I'm trying to remember the exact language in the majority opinion.
It was a well-written opinion by Justice Brister.
Well, I'm sure he'd appreciate that. The court said in that opinion, it's not about what the plaintiff alleges. It's not about the label they attach to it, whether it's misrepresentation or breach of contract or tort. It's about the defendant's contacts. Remember, we're here on a jurisdiction case. Can our awesome state, with its might, power, and majesty, exercise all that might, power, and majesty over a Utah river rafting outfitter that is not incorporated here, has no offices here, has no employees here, has never led a rafting trip here, has never led a hiking trip here.
But purposeful availment is the test.
And purposeful availment is the test.
And they have purposefully tried to get Texans to come out there.
Let me see if this responds to that. Purposeful availment is not passive availment. The foreseeability of causing injury in another state is not a sufficient landmark for exercising personal jurisdiction over an out-of-state defendant who has not consented to be sued there. Now, that was the Michigan Supreme Court in Wickbeck versus Bill Cody's Ranch. Let me hit the advertising point that you made, Justice O'Neill. Quote, the fact that a corporation actively advertises to Michigan residents does not mean it submits to the burden of defending any and all causes of action brought in Michigan that may result from Michigan customers visiting its out-of-state facilities in Oberlies versus Searchmont Resort. You can change the name of the state in that particular quote, but you're going to get the exact same result. And I want to mention, when you talked about purposeful availment of what? Of the privilege of conducting activities within the forum state so as to invoke the benefits and protections of the forum state. Members of the court, my client's never sued or been sued in the state of Texas. Could it have been sued in the locale where this accident and injury occurred in Arizona? Undisputably. Could it have been sued in the state of Utah where it is incorporated, where its three family members have their location, all of their operations, indisputably. But what I suggest to you, not only from Michiana, because obviously it did not involve a bodily injury out of state, but I think under the same principle, Justice Brister said in that opinion, where the plaintiff relies on the fraud, and that's sort of what they've spun the allegations into in this, may determine choice of law, but it does not determine jurisdiction. What determines personal jurisdiction? And that what is purposeful availment, direct conduct, in the case of a tort, I would suggest to you, at least a bodily injury tort, something which directly causes that accident or injury. And you can't have that, I respectfully submit, in a bodily injury case where you have an out-of-state defendant and an out-of-state injury.
But breach of contract, you could. If I sent my money in, and they had refund within 30 you know, outside of 30 days, you can get refund.
Right.
And I requested outside of those 30 days, but they don't return it to me. In breach of that contract, I can sue them here to get my money back.
Yes.
And if it was, if your client was Disney World, which advertises constantly in Texas papers, different rule if you're injured at Disney World, they've arguably...
Yes, it would be. I call it the Budweiser rule. Budweiser's everywhere. But my client is not Land's End or Budweiser or Disney World. It's two brothers and one sister that run, that are second-generation river rafting outfitters out of, and only out of, respectfully, the state of Utah. They don't run anywhere but Utah and in the state of Arizona, because that's where they were born, raised, and grown. And what I suggest to the court in that regard is each of these out-of-state injury cases that involve, whether it's a hotel or a dune ranch or some type of recreational activities, as the amici point out in this case, the real gist, the real substance, to use this court's words from Jim Walters' Holmes versus Reed, the real substance of the cause of action is, where did the person actually have the accident and get hurt? And I don't know what the boundaries are in terms of this notion that we have of it must arise out of, it must relate to the forum state. But I know that Justice Brister said in the Michiana case, we're not here to talk about the relationship among the plaintiff, the forum in the litigation, but the defendant, the forum in the litigation.
Well, let me change the facts a little bit. Tell me at what point you would agree that there's jurisdiction in Texas. If Moki Mac had contacted the drugs first instead of the other way around?
No. Okay.
What if Moki Mac had, after contacting the drugs, and the drugs said, sounds interesting, can you meet with us about it? Moki Mac travels to Dallas and meets with them.
No.
Would that change the outcome?
No.
What if Moki Mac said, well, when we come to meet with you, we're going to bring the equipment and show you how to put it on, and we'll leave it with you. Be sure and bring it with you when we go on this expedition. Would that have changed the outcome?
No. So, I'm doing that consistently. I want you to see why I'm doing it, because I'm trying to persuade you that when it comes to bodily injury outside the state, all these preliminary actions within the state do not establish specific jurisdiction. That's what we're here about, and the reason why is specific jurisdiction is dependent upon the act that causes harm. Preliminaries, here's a great brochure, here's some stuff you might want to use.
Let me add another fact then. In the hypothetical, Moki Mac travels to Dallas, brings the equipment they're going to use in the expedition, and says, our guides are well trained, we've never lost a person, here's the training they've had. We assure you, there nothing will happen. Nobody's going to fall to get injured.
You're making it harder for me now.
Well, we're not just deciding your case. We're trying to draw a line for lots of cases, and we're trying to make sure what you're arguing makes sense in the bigger picture.
Well, and it is important because, as you can see from the not just our filing, but the amici, there's lots of other people that are affected by this, an entire recreational industry that has to answer the question that I started to ask before Justice O'Neill promptly interrupted me, as I thought she would, which is it not only constitutionally permissible, but should these two river rafting folks have really anticipated that they were going to be sued in Dallas County on a Grand Canyon Trail hiking accident when even members of the court, the plaintiffs, did not reside in Dallas County?
It sounds like what you're positing is a rule that distinguishes personal injury from commercial. You said that.
It does.
And the gist, linchpin, is not purposeful availment. It's purposeful availment that has a nexus to the personal injury.
It really is.
So it's different from Burger King.
Yes.
It's different from most all the personal jurisdiction cases, except maybe Michigan. You mentioned some other states that have looked at it, but here it's different from all of our cases except maybe Michiana.
The focal point of the story and the harm suffered. That's some magic words we see. Now let me ask you, would any of us be here today absent, not brochures in Texas, that I submit to you are accurate, or a visitor's acknowledgement of risk that I submit to you not only warned of, but specifically cautioned of the very risk and the very injury that was anticipated or came about in this case. But would any of us really be here? Is there a story without these actions in the state of Arizona? And I submit there's not. And that is one of the central reasons why Arizona...
Sounds to me like a forum non-convenience argument.
Not entirely. It's really something... It's really this argument. It's the argument of, under the Constitution, I respectfully submit that individuals have a right not to be hauled into a court 1,000 miles from their home, 1,000 miles from the place where they are supposed to have inflicted harm or injury, and that place was Arizona. I reserve the balance.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Stephen Aldis will present argument for the respondents.
Your Honors, this case would be over if we were in Michigan, but we're not. And I submit to you, Justice Medina, that Michiana is totally different than this case. As Justice Brister said in the written opinion of this court, Michiana involved the question of whether or not personal jurisdiction exists over a non-resident who allegedly made a misrepresentation in a telephone call. That was what Michiana dealt with. That was what how Michiana ruled. Now, I suspect that we wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for the fact that the Court of Appeals in this case cited to the Memorial Hospital versus Fisher. I put it in my petition for response to the petition for review. But I must say right off the bat that this case is not Michiana. This case is not Memorial Hospital versus Fisher. This case is Siskin versus the Villa. And the only difference between this case and Siskin is that in that case, they did extensive advertising in telephone books, whereas, as Justice O'Neill's pointed out, the telephone book is a piece of paper. The Internet is much better. What we have here are acts of the defendant directed at Texas, which is based upon which arise from or relate to the claims that are being asserted in this lawsuit. First of all,
the defendant did not initiate the contact.
The initial contact, that's correct. The very first phone call came from Texas.
I mentioned the Internet, but I mean, it's a different animal. I mean, to place an ad in Texas in a phone book, you've got to come here, buy the ad in Texas. Internet, you just put up a website and you don't know who's going to hit it.
That's right. And I don't rely upon the Internet to point out that that's why we...
It seems to me the more salient point is when you start gathering information and creating mailing lists through the Internet, that is more of a purposeful availment than is just a website.
And that's correct. That's what I was getting to, Justice. You're right. That initial call from Annie Seals, it came from her. But Mokey Mac, in the findings of the trial court and then reported in the Court of Appeals opinion and supported by the record, they put Annie Seals' name into their computer database. And as the Court of Appeals said, there is no evidence that directly reflects that Annie Seals requested the schedule for 2001 or the two brochures that she was sent in 2001. So what we have is Mokey Mac on its own, as a direct and purposeful act directed at Texas, sent Annie Seals the two brochures and a schedule for the 2001 season. What else did they do? Barbara Franklin sent in a deposit on behalf of Andy, the 13-year-old boy who died in this case. She sent in the deposit. Mokey Mac, in return, sent her back a receipt. In addition to that, Mokey Mac sent the what I'm going to call the release because it's shorter than the visitor's acknowledgement of risk, but they sent the release and testified at court in this hearing that they expect people to rely on the representations made in that release and they expect them to act accordingly. And as a result, the drug signed it. And Mokey Mac testified they would have not been allowed to go on the trip had they not executed this release and sent it back. And when asked in court, Mr. Quist said that agreement is effective at the time and at the place that the person signs it.
So if they'd signed it right before they got on the boat in Arizona, what then?
Well, then I'd be relying solely on the brochures.
But how does this case have anything to do with the brochures?
Well,
explain the specific jurisdiction to me.
right? The allegations by the planning board.
If they weren't negligent on the trail, you wouldn't have a cause of action at all.
Well, no, that's just causation. And the reason I say that is, for a negligent misrepresentation case, if the representations, as the Court of Appeals said, which were specific and safety-related concerns, not just general advertising, but specifically related to safety. The question is, was that a misrepresentation, and did that misrepresentation cause harm? The defendants want you to do a jurisdictional analysis on the causation portion of the case. That's not what it's about.
I'm trying to think. Mr. Bishop points out this was a personal injury case. Remind me of some personal injury cases where the bodily injury occurred outside Texas that we've said you had jurisdiction to sue here.
There is not a single case that I've been able to find in my research. Now, I will say that the little thing that you got up there today is the first time I've seen those cases cited, so I haven't reviewed them. But I will say that
there are... Does Alfaro come to mind?
I'm sorry?
Alfaro?
No. Well, tell me what jurisdiction it is.
Well, it's been a while since I've read it.
That's a form selection.
That's when form on convenience was created, because everybody was from other countries. And
that's right, but the plaintiff here is in Texas.
That's Domingo Alfaro versus Shell Oil Company. You said it matters where this contract was signed. What if this plaintiff received all the information in Texas, went on vacation to Honduras, and signed a contract there? Where would the form be?
Well, it depends on the context of the defendant in transmitting those brochures or getting those brochures. And Justice Brister, just to go back to your question, I have not found a single case that treats a personal injury action any different than a commercial injury, as he said. And the reason I bring this up is you went to great pains, in your opinion, in Michiana, to say it's not the claims, it's the actions of the defendants directed at the forum and their relationship to it. Now, what he's advocating is the exact opposite of what you said. He's saying that it's not that, it's what kind of injury did the plaintiff suffer and where did it happen? But going back to your question, Justice Medina, I will say this, that it always is going to go back to what did the defendant do in the forum that is, and is it related to that claim?
Now, let me ask you this. If we were to find no specific jurisdiction, would we remand to the Court of Appeals for a general jurisdiction analysis?
I think you'd have to, because
they didn't touch that.
They specifically said they didn't rule on that. Now, I will say this, that if you look at the Michiana case and compare it to this case, you will not, no matter how you slice it, they're different. I mean this with great respect, but do not rely on the advocacy of all those here presented to tell you what the record says, because the record is pretty clear, and it's not a very long read. But there is no question that the actions of Moki Mag are what got the release here, and that it was not solicited by anybody, and that it was a requirement that they had. And they say, well, the amicus is very concerned about whether or not all of the river rafting companies are going to have to respond to cases elsewhere. Well, it's very simple. All the courts have said you can specifically design your business so that you are not subject to the jurisdiction of a particular place if you want to.
The cruise line industry has taken care of that by the form selection clause in the back of the tickets.
That's correct. That's one way.
Okay.
Another way is not to make misrepresentations in Texas.
Here's something that I wrestle with in Michiana. What does it matter who initiated the phone call?
That initial phone call?
Right.
Well, if it were only that there was just that initial inquiry from the plaintiffs in this case, then clearly that would be the situation where a defendant cannot be held in the court here for the unilateral actions of another. But that's not where this story ends, and that's why it's important, because it is the actions of the defendant that matter. And when you look at the actions of the defendant, it's clear that they meet the purposeful availment test. One of the things that y'all said in Michiana is you said purposeful availment, one of the issues is, did you try to get profit from this state and from the people in this state? Well, in Michiana, you said one sale, they might have had a profit if it wasn't for the lawsuit, but they didn't have a profit. Well, in this case, the evidence is that they've had 132 Texas residents go on their riverboat trips down the Colorado River in the 5 years preceding the hearing. Now, that shows that they want to do business here, and clearly they do. In fact, one of the statements by Mr. Quist in the hearing was, we don't like to send money back to anybody. We like to keep the money. That's why they're in this business. They might be a two people running a mom-and-pop riverboating company that's incorporated, but irrespective of that, they're out there for a profit just like anybody else.
Why doesn't the 13% from Texas from the last half decade maybe go to establish a general jurisdiction but not specific?
No, I understand. It is not an independent factor to be weighed in a specific jurisdiction analysis. Other than this, one of the things that is important for all the courts whenever they look at this is the foreseeability that the defendant has that he might be hailed into court here. Despite the protestations of Mr. Bishop, that is what that evidence goes to. That evidence goes to, look, if you consistently do business in this state in an effort to get the citizens of this state to...
We don't know that. We don't know that the 13% is doing business in the state. We don't know how many. I mean, for instance, here they sent a brochure to one person who gave it to somebody else. I mean, what if that somebody else had been in Estonia? Then we have jurisdiction. Estonian courts have jurisdiction of Grand Canyon River rafters, too.
That's not what the record says, Your Honor. And I just, I feel like
the
I
seals,
have to
correct. I mean, so the seals didn't give it and give it to your clients?
That is correct. But with respect to the 132 other individuals, it relates to the forms that they actually signed saying that they would, the same release, saying that they wouldn't go. That's how they knew that they were from Texas. It wasn't that they, you know, had somebody who was the contact point in Texas and then they had others spread out elsewhere. That wasn't the case. If you look at Exhibit 14...
So the deal, so the difference is here, if you if they'd have waited to sign, to make people sign the release till they got to Arizona, they wouldn't have purposely availed, but because we sent them ahead for you to actually look at them before you're already in Arizona ready to go, then you purposely avail.
If I said that, I apologize. I didn't mean to say that. I said that would change the analysis to focus on what the defendant's acts were with respect to the brochures, because we have made allegations that the brochures themselves also contain similar misrepresentations to the release. And what I would say is I would have to then focus on whether or not the defendant's actions in giving those releases to the state of Texas were sufficient under the purposeful availment standard to justify asserting jurisdiction over them here. But going back to one thing that you brought up.
Of course, in Michiana, there was a release signed in Texas when the RV was delivered.
But it was delivered by a common carrier, I mean, and it was paid for totally by the plaintiff in the case.
I assume nobody from Moki Mac walked this one over. I assume it was delivered by the a common carrier, i.e., the postal service.
Right, but there's also no indication. I mean, the drugs had no idea that this form existed. In other words, it was done for the benefit of Moki Mac in this state. And, you know, Mr. Quist said in his testimony that he expects people to rely on the representations made in these agreements. And now that we are, does that make it, does that make us wrong or somehow bad? In the, as we go through this and they come back on rebuttal, I want to point out that the second restatement of towards Section 311 has never officially been adopted by this court other than in this context. In DSA Inc. versus Hillsborough ISD at 973-662, the court said in a per curiam opinion, a party may recover for negligent misrepresentation involving a risk of physical harm only if actual physical harm results. And the court cited to the second restatement, Section 311. Other than that, the San Antonio Court of Appeals has cited to that provision in an adoptive sort of way. And the reason I'm bringing this up is even if you were to say, or it, say that Mr. Bishop is right, that let's all be honest, we wouldn't be here if Andy Drug, this 13-year-old boy who was 6'1 and 250 pounds and probably a little young for what he was carrying, didn't fall off that ledge. Well, the reality is that if you check our second amended petition, we also asked for economic damages that resulted. So I submit to you that irrespective of whether or not you determine that only personal injury that personal injury is not compensable through Section 311, we have also made the allegations. And I think it really goes back to what you asked, Justice O'Neill. You asked him if there would be personal jurisdiction if this were a contract case. And he said yes. The reality of it is you don't look at the cause of action. That's exactly what you said in that Michiana case. So it shouldn't change if the cause of action is negligent misrepresentation or contract, because it's not part of the formula. It has nothing to do with the contacts of the defendants to this jurisdiction. The contact of the defendant with this jurisdiction was to send a document that he intended for people to rely on here. They did rely on it here, and they were harmed as a result. I want to read a passage to you from Siskin. Siskin's allegations of misrepresentation based on Villa's advertisements and letters, as well as his telephone conversation with Villa, and Siskin relied on Villa's representations in Texas, and this fact is enough for jurisdiction. The connection between the claims and the contact, the representation made to him in Texas, induced him to enter into the contract in Texas. I know that in the discussion in Michiana, there was a great deal of argument or statements about, hey, look, you can't just say that you relied on or the effects of fraud were felt in this state in order to justify jurisdiction. And I believe that's correct. And I don't think that no one is saying that in this case. The where it comes in is that if you make representations in the state of Texas that you intend to be relied on, you can't be said to say, I didn't anticipate that we'd ever have to answer a case in Texas. If you send in information into Texas and it is wrong, it is a lie, it is a misrepresentation, whatever you want to call it, you expect people to rely on it, and they do to their detriment. Shouldn't you expect to be hauled into court here? And I believe that the answer is yes, and it always has been yes. And there is no difference between this case and many cases that were decided unless you believe the spin put by one side or the other on what the facts are. But the facts are very simple. There are direct, purposeful acts by Milky Man. Justice Wainwright, you asked me earlier if there was a, if would this change based upon the first contact who initiated it? Well, let me say it differently. They get the first contact and they said, yes, if you want to go, you can go. I'll put you on the reservation and then you'll have to come here to do it. And designed it such that they don't have this issue that they have now. Sure, they could have done it. But the reality is, Moki Mac wanted the business in Texas just as much as he wants the business in New York or anywhere else. That is only one part of the test, but it shows that they wanted to make a profit off of this in Texas for their trips out in Arizona. One of the ways they protect themselves is by submitting this agreement with representations that they believe help them, but may also prove to be false in this case. So it's not just that they are actually profiting, but it's also that they have to anticipate that if they make false statements in items that they send to Texas, then they're going to be hailed into court here.
The internet cases generally say passive internet advertisement that says this is who we are, this is what we do, come spend money here is not enough. How is what Moki Mac did any different from that?
Well, they sent this release directly to my clients, said, this is what we'll do.
One could argue when you put up a passive website, you are sending through the internet exactly the same kinds of representations. But U.S. courts uniformly say passive websites aren't enough to avail yourself of any jurisdiction. Because, of course, passive websites are just put up, and aliens from outer space can look at them. It's not a purposeful avail of any particular place.
All of the Texas residents who have been on a trip to the Moki Mac have been required to sign that release, which would be different than your passive site. Because
would you
it's
say
not
the creation of listservs would cross the line?
No.
I mean, creating a list of hits and then actively, I mean, on my internet, I get 20 a day from people who have me somehow on a listserv, Would that cross the line from being a passive website to an active website?
If that were true, I could sue every hair color because my hair has gone gray on me. But no, I don't believe so, unless because many times, for instance, your email address may not even reveal where you are. As far as I'm concerned, it really has to be the act directed at Texas. And here, you know, as much as it's avoided in the briefing of the petitioners, I also rely on, and that is they sent this release and said sign. Looks like my red light's on, and so I'll take a seat unless anybody else wants to ask me a question.
Thank you.
Members of the court, my opponent stands up and says if we were in Michigan, we would have a different result. Respectfully, the U.S. Constitution is what governs this case, not Michigan law. And we wouldn't have a different result, and we shouldn't have a different result, and that's why we're here. My opponent says, well, there was a finding of this, that, and the other. May it please the court, we specifically asked for findings of fact. They were refused. The Court of Appeals started its opinion by saying we do not cite the legal principles which govern personal jurisdiction. May I respectfully submit that that's a double-barrel recipe for disaster when you don't have findings of specific fact and you don't have, as the Court of Appeals did not have, a specific statement of the principles that were governed. My opponent says that, well, the Court of Appeals just relied on this overruled case. Well, it did. It specifically did rely upon Memorial Hospital versus Fisher, which is very, very significant. But equally significant, I would submit to the court, is the Court of Appeals' failure to address this key factual scenario that I know is at the bottom of all of your minds. Moki Mack didn't know who the Drews were, justices. We didn't know who they were. We didn't solicit them. Annie Seals came to Moki Mack and said, I'd like to make a reservation. We didn't have any space. And the email.
All those businesses never know who the clients are. Do they show up or submit a check?
The purpose there, I think, though, is when Justice O'Neill was asking me some questions about, well, if you go in and you solicit people and you try to get agreements, you try to get contracts with them, is it the same? And my answer is it's not the same. I still suggest to all of you that where we have a bodily injury involving an out-of-state defendant, an out-of-state bodily injury, it's going to be a rare situation in the absence of general jurisdiction, which I'll talk about in just a minute, that you're going to be able to say the plaintiff can file suit anywhere and everywhere he or she read a brochure or later says, well, I relied upon it, or where they have some harm. Members of the court, we had people on this trip from Nebraska, from Fairbanks, Alaska. Can we be sued there? Can we be sued in any of those states as long as somebody says I had some harm, I read it, I relied upon it? I suggest to you that the boundaries of constitutional due process are not so flimsy. And I suggest to you further that what this case was all about is as
well,
the email.
Let me ask you this. All right. You represent that you're going to have cabins that are air-conditioned in Arizona on this trip. I go out there and I see that there aren't cabins that are air-conditioned. You've breached that contract with me. Can I sue you in Texas?
Where did the breach occur? It had to be.
Well, you told me. I mean, the brochure you sent me and the information you sent me shows these nice air-conditioned cabins. And I get out there and I see they're not out there.
And what I suggest to you, Justice O'Neill, is to a certain extent what these courts said in the Michigan cases I put in this little handout. They said, you know, you can do all these things, but the punchline has to be a part of it. The damage, the harm, the injury has to be a part of it.
Well, I paid you my money before I came.
Correct.
And you made the misrepresentation to me in your brochure with these pictures of these cabins.
You're saying that we knew there was no air conditioning and we lured you out there. Different story.
Why is that any different? Because the injury is money versus death.
The nature of the harm is what I would say to you.
Well, but if you represent to me here that we're going to have equipment, let's say same scenario, family goes out there, they see that they don't have safety equipment, they don't enroll in the program, and they sue to get their money back. You're saying that case could go forward in Texas because there was a breach, there was a misrepresentation about equipment. But because you get out there and go ahead and hike and you're injured because there's no equipment, that's different.
I say that personal injuries in out-of-state defendant cases are different. and I ask the court in the final moment, I'm out of time, take a look at fair play and substantial justice. It's fair to sue Moki Mack here. It's fair to sue him anywhere, and that's not fair. Thank you, members of the board.
Thank you. The cause is submitted, and that concludes all causes for today. The marshal will now adjourn the court.